We've all heard the expression, swim 2.4 miles, bike 112 miles, run 26.2 miles, and brag the rest of your life. What you don't hear is that your friends, your family, and especially your coworkers grow tired of hearing about your early morning swim, how you skipped lunch to get a spin class in, how you crushed your brick workout, or how you've become a math whiz at calculating your macros. My name is Mike Bosch. I have a wife, two sons, and a full-time job. 5 years ago, I began my triathlon journey with modest intentions. I wanted to lose some weight and be able to claim that my best athletic days weren't behind me. After completing my first sprint triathlon, I was bit by the Ironman bug. 3 years later and 50 pounds lighter, I completed Ironman Texas, and I couldn't have done it without an incredible support system. Everyone needs a support system, and that's what I'm offering you. I will talk to men and women just like you and me, the age group athlete that is juggling family, friends, work, and all that life has to offer on their journey to accomplishing an incredible goal. This podcast will offer recommendations on training, nutrition, some tips and tricks, and even strategies for race day. Whether you're training for your first race, looking to set a personal best, or have completed a full distance race on every continent, we all want to cross the finish line and hear those words, "You are an Ironman." Wherever you are on your journey, this podcast is for you. So if you're ready, let's talk to this episode's Everyday Ironman. Welcome to the Everyday Ironman podcast, where I talk to real athletes just like you and me that are working to complete an incredible goal. My name is Mike Bosch, and I'm excited to have with me today Jim Bristow, who is a 10-time Ironman finisher. Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm surprised you called me an athlete.
Oh, no, you're for sure an athlete. Anybody who has 10-time Ironman finisher on their resume, there's no other word they can describe you.
All right. I do them all poorly about that, but I do get them done.
Well, and everybody has a different fitness level, a different goal. And as we go through this show, I hope that we'll get to learn a little bit more about that, right? But but before we get into your Ironman journey, right, I think it would be a great idea if we can give the listeners a little sense of your background, right? Can you tell us just a little bit about yourself? Like, where do you live? Are you married? Do you have kids? Were you athletic in school? Were you an athletic child? Like, that kind of thing.
Well, I currently reside in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Actually, a little city outside of Chattanooga called Ottawa. Took me a long time to learn how to spell that one, but it's a suburb outside of Chattanooga. It's been an interesting life. My wife and I have been married for 28 years.
Congratulations. We have no kids,
but we've also figured out that we've probably moved, I think the last total is we have moved about 15 times in those 28 years. So she's a godsend. She loves her husband for some reason. My career has taken me at many stops, and for the last 2 years here in Chattanooga, but I've been with my current company for 5 years. Was I an athlete in high school or in school? Well, my high school career was interesting. I think at one time I was trying to aim for a negative grade point average. I tend to be a little bit more on the goofball side than maybe paying attention more to my studies. It just wasn't that interest to me. But a lot of the things that I did in high school, you can look back now. Let's see. I graduated in 85. So what would that make me? Well, that would make me old. That's right. It reminds me a lot of the things that still challenge me today. But we can get into that a little bit later if you want.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to learn because And I do want to kind of learn your background. I started triathlete late in life, and I wasn't what I would consider myself super athletic. I grew up in North Texas, and there was a lot of high school football and stuff. Like, I didn't play. And so I think what's interesting is what I found talking to people is everybody's level of athletic background can be different. You had mentioned that you were a goofball in school. And obviously, you know, I first became aware of you through your Facebook posts in the Ironman Texas 2000XX Facebook group that we're both members of. And Ironman Texas was canceled again. Oh, I guess it wasn't canceled. It was postponed, right? I guess
postponed. Is that
the official decision officially, was postponed. Yeah. But you posted several post throughout the day as if you were the only competitor on the course. And I remember reading them the day of the race, and they were just so funny and witty, and you seemed like you had a great sense of humor. So I'd have a question. Did you think that was that well planned in advance? Did it something that just popped in your head the day before? Like, how did that even happen?
Nothing I ever do is well planned in advance. well, yeah, there's a lot of first timers and there's a lot of veterans, and your heartstrings go out a little bit to the people who are going to make it their first Ironman. You know, I've always said that you never forget your first Ironman, and you know how nervous you are, how scared you are of the unknown, and you train so hard, whether it's, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year out later, just so you can toe that starting line at that race, and to go through what we've gone through as a world, you know, in the last whatever it is now 14 15 16 months, and have race after race after race either postponed, moved back, and eventually canceled. It's been, for me, it's been an interesting part of this journey I've been on. And, you know, there were a lot of people that were frustrated, rightly so. You know, whoever made the decision to cancel the race, you know, it wasn't Ironman. We were at the mercy of local officials, government officials, and so on. And all it took, and I kept on saying, all it takes is one person, whoever has their own agenda. You know, generally, it probably rolls more into the politics side of things, to make a statement saying, look at me, local voters, this is what I did. And from what I gather, that's kind of how Ironman got kiboshed in April. Mm. Well, you know, most of the bike ride is done on a toll road. Really exciting, by the way. But it's a toll road. It's fast. Not much scenery, but there was a toll road official that said, nope, can't have it on my toll road because of COVID or whatever stupid reason. So a lot of people who were training for that, you know, the wind just got knocked out of their sails. So, you know, on that day, you know, to make light, to show that a lot of times we hold Ironman maybe a little too seriously in our lives. For me, it was probably just a way to blow off some steam, blow off some of the anxiety that, even though I've done this many times, I still feel on that day. So I'm glad it brought some smiles, and I'm glad it brought some giggles to those who read my posts.
Yeah. You're exactly right, because obviously there were a lot of people that were frustrated and, you know, didn't understand, and obviously decisions are made for why decisions are made. And I thought they were very clever, very witty. It didn't seem to be, at least I didn't read them as disrespectful. It was just, hey, the situation was what the situation was, and you were having a little bit of fun. But it wasn't like just one post. It was all day. Even starting the day before, it seemed like you had done your bike check-in or whatever. And I remember, so obviously Ironman Texas is the one full distance race that I have run. I did two half distance. I did Buffalo Springs in Lubbock, and then Galveston in the year
Those
before.
Those are two toughies.
Yeah, so I did them in 16, 17, and I did Ironman Texas in 18. And so you're right, that Hardy Tollway bike course is so riveting. But what's funny, I thought the local officials in 2018, while there was some criticism, I thought they did a great job, at least from my perspective. I had an incredible experience that several days leading up.
I think a lot of people tend to forget that. Oh, this is gonna be such an obvious statement. Ironman is supposed to be hard.
Yeah.
No matter how much you practice or you train for it, you gotta just worry about the things that you can control. You know, stay in the moment. And you know, I did 2018 also, and I remember being on that toll road watching the drafting. I mean, just the horde of group of cyclists. You know, we're not talking five people. We were talking 30 people, 40 people, just crowded together, and they would swallow up less confident riders and spit them out at the end. And it was amazing to see how many crashes and, you know, bad feelings that had for that race. I mean, overall, I thought the race was pretty, pretty good. I mean, the ever famous swim, not only do we have, you know, it gets crowded at the end, where usually in most swims it's opened up at the end, but we have to all funnel into a canal, and you have to remind yourself not to step on the surface below you because you don't know what you're stepping on. It could be a nail, it could be a broken bottle or something like that. And of course, it's also the duck poo pond. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't the cleanest swim, but I've done worse. I thought the bike was really good. I hit the wall probably around mile 100, and those last 12 miles were a fog. I even remember getting off my bike, handing my bike to a volunteer, and all of a sudden I found myself on the ground. Apparently, for a brief moment or two, I might have actually passed out.
Oh, wow.
And you don't know the details leading up to this race, but right at that moment, I was facing my fourth DNF in a row. And I wasn't going to allow that to happen. But my timing got all screwed up. The medical people took me into the tent, and I had to cross the runner's timing mat to get to the tent. Mm-hmm. And they've been telling me, you're still in the race. As long as you don't give us your chip, you're still in the race. So I laid there for a few minutes on the table, and there was a person next to me. And I heard the person next to me say, okay, I'm ready to get back in the race. And the volunteer said, you can't get back in the race because you gave us your chip. At that second, I rose up from the table, jumped off, and I said, I'm out of here. And I ran to the transition tent. I probably sat in the transition tent for another 10 or 20 minutes. And I remember having in my transition bag, I put a big white bath towel, mm-hmm. you know, to kind of off the grime and all this other type of stuff. And I was sitting right next to the kiddie pool that had all the Gatorade in it. Mm-hmm. By that time, a lot of the ice and stuff was melted. So I just dipped. No, I didn't dip. I threw the towel into the little kiddie pool, and then I draped it around my neck. And for the next 25 miles, I kept on doing that at every aid station, and that's what got me through that. And the greatest thing about that race was I know David Downey pretty well. David Downey's the gentleman who does a lot of the videos for the races.
Okay.
You know, we talked once in a while, and during the race, he took my wife and said, when Jim comes into the finish line, I want you to stand right here. And he positioned her right behind the camera person, the guy who's taking your finishing picture. Mm-hmm. And I come around the corner, you know, the lights are bright. Oh, it's probably, what did I finish that race? 16 hours and 2 minutes or something like that. It was one of my slowest races. And you hear Mike Riley call your name, and you get past the lights. And then I see my wife holding the medal. She puts the medal, and we hug each other, and a picture gets taken. So anytime you want to bring up the 2018 Ironman YouTube video for Texas,
Yep.
The thumbnail is my wife and I hugging each other.
Oh, get out of here. That is so cool.
You know, there's been a lot of ups and downs in this journey, but that was one of my happier moments. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine, especially hearing the story and realizing that you were that close to not being able, you know, to not again. Finishing it. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That
my Ironman journey's been, it's been highs and lows. That's for sure.
That is funny. Why you said something a second ago, you said you made a statement, you never forget your first, right? And so when you think back to the very first time you heard Iron Man or you thought of Iron Man prior to completing your first one, what image does that give you?
Well, the first time I ever thought of Iron Man is I am one of those wide world sports generation people. And if, I don't know if you ever hear the story about Julie Moss and wide world sports. So this goes back into the 80s. For those who probably are 45 or 40 years or younger, I don't know if they remember what Wide World Sports was. Wide World Sports was kind of ESPN before ESPN came out. They went around the world and they just did stories on goofy, weird, unusual sports that us Americans probably never have a chance to do. And the story goes, ABC, Wide World Sports, was in Hawaii and they were planning to film some golf tournament on Oahu. But for some reason, I don't know if it was a storm or what, it got canceled. But then they heard about this little goofy race that was over on the Big Island. And at that time, I think it was probably 1980, 82, 83, something like that. So Ironman was in infancy. You know, it started in 78 and it just moved over to the Big Island because it started in Oahu, but it moved over to the Big Island a couple of years before that. And they wanted to film this goofy race called the Ironman. You know, they didn't even really know what the swim was. They didn't even know what the bike was. And you know, they thought a marathon was like a 5K, you know, like a lot of people when you say, I ran a 5K marathon or something like that. And what really got me was the woman's leader. Her name was Julie Moss, or her name is Julie Moss. She was a college student at that time, and she was actually doing her thesis on Ironman. And lo and behold, she found herself in first place.
Oh, wow.
You know, she's plodding along for a good portion of that race. And as the race neared, it might have been a few hundred yards before the finish line, she collapsed. And she ultimately finished second in the women's division. But she didn't stop. She just eventually crawled to the finish line. So, you know, back in my 80s when I was the goofball in high school and all that type of stuff, for some reason that just kind of stuck with me. And, you know, as life goes on, you know, you get jobs and you get married and you kind of forget about those things. And at one point I found myself about 265 pounds. So learning how to eat better, learning how to exercise better, I started my journey. You know, I started with 5Ks, but I would never do anything longer than a 5K. Then I went to 10K. Then I went to half marathon. Then I went to marathon. And then I figured out, oh yeah, I remember something. You can swim and bike before these things. So it grew from sprints to Olympics to half marathon or half Ironmans to Ironmans. And I found myself training for Ironman Wisconsin in 2009 in Madison, Wisconsin. And I remember volunteering that year because back then, really the only way you could sign up for an Ironman because they were so popular is you had to volunteer for the race the year before.
Oh,
and you got
wow.
put into a line the next morning and you could sign up to be an Ironman. It wasn't there wasn't really much internet back then yet. And I remember volunteering all day. And I wanted to volunteer at the finish line, the late finish line from like 8:30 to midnight. So I get in line, give me a little Ironman hat. I'm going, I don't know if I really should wear this because I'm not an Ironman yet. And I thought about it a little bit. And of course, for the race, I put it on, I wore it. But I remember right around 9 o'clock. So that's a 14-hour mark in the Ironman. You know, Mike Riley's doing his thing. You know, he's pumping up the crowd. He's getting everybody emotional. And finisher after finisher gets their name called. And I'm catching these people, and I'm, you know, the smiles that they had on their face, the tears that were coming down their face. I was the first person they could actually tell someone that they were an Ironman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a Mike Riley thing, but Mike Riley plays a song. It's a U2 song, The Streets with No Name.
Yep.
And the song starts building, and he starts telling a little bit of a story. And for some reason, for me, the lights seem to get brighter. The music went from volume 10 to volume 11. It got louder, and the crowd just kept on growing and growing. And minute after minute, hour after hour, until the midnight finish, I was hooked. So I found myself the next morning, you know, I signed up for 2010, had no idea what I was doing. I think I finally settled on my nutrition for the bike was Twizzlers and Payday bars. Big mistake. And then try to take whatever, you know, whatever we had at the aid stations. And if you really do have about 7 hours, I could probably tell you every moment of that race. I could tell you how the wind felt on my face. I can remember bobbing up and down in Lake Monona, and the sunrise was coming up, and A Beautiful Day from U2 played. Right before the cannon shot off, it was Don't Stop Believing by Journey. And it was just a magical day. And then running down the hill with the Capitol, Wisconsin, the state capitol behind you, I was the only person at my time that was finishing. There was nobody ahead of me, and there was nobody behind me. I remember coming around a corner, and I don't know how many people were there. Hundreds? Thousands? I don't know. Probably thousands was too many. But as soon as I turned that corner, the crowd just stood up, cheered. And it got really loud, and they were all cheering for me. They didn't know who I was from. And I remember Mike Riley calling my name, and the rest is history. So I've been doing this now for 12 years.
So that's a great story for sure.
I got plenty of them.
I love hearing that. And it's so true. I can remember so many vivid details of the 2018 Ironman Texas. I think more than anything else, I remember the taste of the water, which is probably not a great memory necessarily, but a memory nonetheless. But yeah, there's just something about the energy of the crowd when it comes around the finish line, and especially if you're a late finisher. I finished late in the night. I think it was 10 o'clock. When I finish, so obviously
you're fast.
No. But all the pros that didn't be done, all the age group hopefuls who were trying to get the Kona slot and all that, they were all done, had dinner, showered, they were done, right? But there were still so many people on the course, and so there were so many friends and family that were just there cheering you on. And you're right, they didn't know who I was, but just they were cheering me on, and it just gives you that boost of energy and adrenaline or whatever it is after a long, exhausting day. So you finish Wisconsin in 2010. When do you do your next race? Like how did your transition go from there?
I did Ironman Florida 2011. I finished that 13:54. It's amazing you still remember the times that you finish these things. Wisconsin was 15:35. So I took an hour and a half.
Ooh. There you go.
Thought I knew everything. You know, I finished two of these things. You know, these are things that are going to be a piece of cake. 2013, I signed up for Ironman Kentucky, Louisville. Of course, that was back when they had it in August. And late August in Louisville, it ain't chilly.
Mm.
That was 95. I had some bike issues. My hopeful 6 hour and 45 minute bike turned into, I think it was like an 8 hour and 10 minute bike. So you roll into transition, just deflated. And, you start counting on your fingers how many hours you have left to get the marathon done. And, you sit there for a while and you decide. And fortunately for me, I decided to keep on going. And it was mostly a walk. That's what most of my marathons end up being, a slog or a jog or a little bit of a shuffle here and there. I remember getting close to mile 10, and I actually saw a friend of mine. She was laying on the grass, and she had heat stroke, pretty bad. Stopped. And, you know, I stayed with her for a while and you know, try to get fluids into her and things like that. And I finally found a couple police officers to get them to take care of her. And I waddled on after that. And I got past halfway. And around mile 14, I felt a tap on my shoulder. And I'm going, what, you know, what's going on? And I feel it again. And then all I hear is, are you okay? I go, yeah, I'm fine. Just, you know, I'm just moving along. He goes, dude, you haven't been moving for 20 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And I kind of came to and there I was sitting on the curb. So my first DNF, it was a hard one to take. I stopped at mile 14. So I was 2012 Kentucky. So 2013 was my first of many, many, many comebacks. I got a coach. I buckled down a little bit more. And I ended up at Lake Placid. Beautiful.
Oh, that's what I've heard.
You know, the swim is great. The bike, it's... I've never been so scared going down a mountain. There's a 7-mile downhill you have to do twice. But and then you get to finish on the Olympic speed skating oval in Lake Placid. So it has a little bit of an Olympic feel to it. Finished that was my fastest race, 1347. I was probably the fittest I could be for an Ironman. So I had some unfinished business, and I found myself in Louisville 4 weeks later, conquering the 2013 Ironman Louisville.
So you did Lake Placid, set a personal record, and then went back to Louisville 4 weeks later?
Never said I was the smartest person on the planet.
No. I'm just making sure I'm tracking. And yeah. how was your second Louisville experience?
1507. I met some really nice people that have become good friends over the years. You know, we've stayed in contact through Facebook and things like that. The story after Kentucky, after Louisville, takes an interesting turn. My wife and I moved down to Florida. At that time, we were living in Chicago. And during the move, I blew out, moving stuff, I blew out my L3, L4 disc in my back. I was down to about 10% use of my left leg. I mean, I was like Igor from Young Frankenstein. My leg would just be...
Oh, wow.
Right? And I probably, at this moment, met the most important person in my Ironman life. Her name is Vicky. And I was really down. I went to many doctors. And, you know, all these doctors tell me, it's done. You can't do this anymore. Knowing Vicky a little bit from Ironman here and there, Vicky lives down in West Palm Beach. We connected a little bit through Facebook, and it happened at that time her daughter worked for a specialist that actually did disc surgeries and things like that, and he's worked on Ironman athletes in the past. So, you know, she rushed me into this doctor, and, you know, the doctor looks at me, and he goes, man, you really are screwed up. And I go, I don't know. And eventually he goes, you want to be an Ironman again? Yeah, of course. You know, we're silly or we're stupid that way. And of course, you know, of course I want to. He goes, are you going to follow my plan? I go, of course I'm going to follow your plan. He goes, no. I know you guys. You're Ironman. You don't follow anybody's plan but your own. I go, no. You're the doctor. You're the specialist. I'll follow that plan for you. He goes, well, if you follow my plan within 15 months, you'll be towing the starting line again for another Ironman. I go, okay. And I remember going for surgery. I remember a hand being put on my shoulder. And I remember someone just saying, the pain is almost gone. I wake up, I'm in the hospital bed. And another Ironman friend, I wake up and he's there. And I'm going, you know, he was from Chicago. And he just happened to be visiting down in Florida at that time. And he saw my story. And he goes, you know, I had to be here to welcome you back into the world. With the doctor, and the doctor goes, as soon as you get home, I need you to walk outside, because I don't care how long you go, but you need to every day do something. So the first day, I think I walked a minute. My wife was holding onto my belt loop so I wouldn't fall. Mm-hmm. All stuff. So I walked a minute back in my house. I was exhausted. I probably slept for hours. Next day was a minute and a half. Next day was 2 minutes, you know, and so on and so on. In the meantime, Ironman was buying a lot of independent full distance Ironman distance races. And they bought what essentially has become Ironman Maryland, okay, up in Cambridge. So Ironman buys it. And I go to my first doctor's visit. And I kind of go, you know, he goes, I knew it. Not gonna fall. I go, no. I give him the whole story about Ironman buying the stuff. He goes, well, when is it? And I go, well, it's September. It was 9 months, not 15 months. He goes, why do you want to do it? And the real reason why I wanted to do it is I really wanted to tell those three doctors that I went to that told me that my Ironman career was over, to take a long leap off of a short pier in so many kind words. I think I used probably a little bit more sailor's words.
Right.
Of what I explained to my doctor. And he looked at me and he goes, okay, I will agree this. I'll agree to doing, are you doing this? But you have to do one thing. And I go, what's that? He goes, you have to walk the marathon. I'm that's what I do anyway. So Ironman did get wind of this. This is kind of where David Downey comes in, you know, the guy who does the videos. And to make the long story short, I was one of the inspirational Ironman people for that race. That I wasn't number
so
one,
cool.
But I did get my little video and all this other type of stuff. But I finished that race. And I walked the entire marathon. And again, thinking a little too much of myself, Ironman Florida was a couple months later. I figured, I'm in good shape. And 2014 Florida was, the swim was canceled. It was 40 some degrees. The wind was 30 miles per hour. So it was a bike time trial start. And it was the most miserable 112 miles I ever put myself through. I didn't have the core strength since it was an L3, L4 disc surgery, to stay in the aero position. So I had to stay up in my tri bike. And of course, all that wind kept on hitting me. And this is where my streak of DNFs really started. I never want to pull myself out because of me. But there is ways around it to make you feel like other people are pulling you out of the race. So you can look back and kind of say, yep, it wasn't me. I was pulled out because of medical, or I was pulled out because of this reason. And we're getting into the transition. And in Florida at that time at the boardwalk, you actually go inside of a convention center. That's where transition is. It's not a big tent. It's actually inside. I remember just sitting there in transition. Volunteer comes by. You okay? Yeah, I'm fine. A couple minutes later, volunteer comes over. You okay? Yeah, I'm fine. A couple minutes later, it's the lead volunteer guy. Are you okay? Oh, yeah, I'm okay. A couple minutes later, the medical person comes by, sits by me. He goes, dude, we're pulling you out. Learned a lesson how you could just sit there and eventually somebody else pulls you out of the race. A very, very dangerous lesson to learn because it makes it easy. Am I talking too much?
No, I'm loving hearing this, right? Because I think what I hope is valuable to the listener is, and you said it before, is it's hard. It's a hard race. And
it's supposed to be hard.
You know, it's supposed to be hard. And that's why it's a sense of accomplishment when you complete it. And I think a couple of things that I learned, but you validate, is things don't always go the way you think it's going to go. And you have to have a backup plan. And sometimes you have to accept that things didn't go the way that you thought they were going to go. And you have to regroup, replan, and start again, right?
The lesson that people have to learn, it's much easier to quit. And there's a lot of bad four-letter words in the English language. Quit is probably, for me, the worst.
Gotcha.
Learning this lesson the wrong way in Florida made it so much easier for the next handful of races that I did not complete. I went to Coeur d'Alene in 2015. Again, a beautiful venue. I wish I could be doing it again this year. Just the timing just is not working. But, you know, it's at the end of June. But they moved it to the end of June, so it wouldn't be so hot. It just so happened that day, it got up to 105 degrees. I remember someone telling me that the pavement was like 140 degrees. Mm. And it wasn't so much the hot, it was really dry. And the swim was fine. And Coeur d'Alene's kind of like a figure eight bike, small loop on the top, on the bottom. And there's a bank in the middle of downtown Coeur d'Alene that has the temperature. I remember going out seeing that the temperature was, I don't know, 76, let's say. You get done with the little loop, it was like 85. Mm. And you go all throughout the big loop, because it's a two-loop course, and you get back and you see the bank, it was 92. Oof. And by the time I did the second small loop, you come back and you saw the temperature was 102. And in Coeur d'Alene, there's three huge hills. There's one that's 3 miles long, there's one that's 2 miles long, there's one that's 1 mile long. But at the top of the 1 mile hill, there's an aid station. And at that time, it was mile 80. I go, yeah, I just kept on saying, just get to the top of these stupid hills. You could stop at the aid station, gather yourself, you know, rehydrate and so on. And I get up there and it was carnage. I've never seen it before. They totally ran out of water. They totally ran out of ice. All that was left was the orange Gatorade. I think it was Powerade back then. Stuff. There were no gas stations for people to go get us stuff. And we were out in the middle of nowhere. And I remember sitting there for, oh man, it seemed like forever, probably 10, 20 minutes. I actually met a couple of my friends and they encouraged me to keep on going. And I eventually did get on my bike, but I saw people laying on the asphalt, which was 140 degrees, begging them to get up because they were simply going to burn themselves.
Yeah.
Well, else. I finally made it back to transition, another 8 hour bike ride. Ugh. I eventually get out on the run, made it through mile 1, 2, and then it just started going downhill. And I remember pulling myself out at mile 8 of that race. Got put into the van of shame is what I call it, you know. And you know, there was a bunch of us, but you know, it's just the drive back into town and then sitting in a medical tent listening to Mike Riley call people in, being happy for friends that were finishing, even though I was so disappointed in myself.
Yeah, that's got to be tough.
So it was time to rebound again. So what is this comeback number? I don't know. I've already lost count how many comebacks I've made. Chattanooga, 2016, 95 degrees that year. Again, another hot race. So you're seeing a trend here. I don't do very well hot. I got to fix that because there that one certain race in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
I got a little hot.
Yeah.
And Chattanooga, same thing happened. And I pulled myself out of mile 80 on the bike. Took a year off. I didn't do anything in 2017. 2018 was the next big comeback. And 2018 was a big... It was something bigger than I thought I could do. I actually signed up for three races, which the first one was Ironman Texas. Did that one. Almost didn't finish that one, but I dragged my behind out of there as quick as I could and not let anybody pull me out. And then I did Chattanooga. So I finished that race in 2018 that I didn't finish. And then I went back and hit Florida. Florida was kind of iffy because that was the year that Panama City got hit by a hurricane. So they quickly everything down to Haines City, down to Orlando. And that was probably one of my more fun races because from mile 9 to the end of the marathon, it just poured. We were in not inches of water in some places. We were in feet, you know, up to our shoes and sometimes in water. We were all just splashing through it and having a good time.
Just having a good old time.
We realized what that race was. 2019, I did Mount Tremblant, probably the most gorgeous race I've done. A lot of good stories in there. 2019, I went back and did Florida. So that got me to 10. And in the Ironman world, unless you're fast, which I'm not, bless those people who are fast, they can qualify for Kona just on pure speed and pure talent. Unless you're rich, you know, Ironman gives away 3 or 4 slots to Kona every year, and they cost about $45,000. unless you're famous. I'm not George Clooney, so that's not going to happen. My only option to ever reach my Kona dream is to do 12 of them. So I'm too short. And last year I was fortunate. I did sign up for Texas, which eventually got postponed or canceled. But I also signed up for Florida. And Florida was one of the few full distance races I were able to go off last year. And I was ready. I thought physically, mentally, and everything, I was ready. And I was having, I had a decent swim. I had a fantastic bike. But somewhere around mile 8 on the marathon through 13, it all fell apart. And the hardest part was at mile 13 is where my condo was.
Oh. And even though
I had like 4 or 5 hours to finish the last 13 miles, I looked at my condo and I gave up. Hmm. If anybody ever asks anybody, what's the hardest part of an Ironman? There's a lot of hard parts. You know, swimming 2.4 miles isn't easy. Biking 112 is not easy. Running a marathon is not easy. But the hardest distance of any Ironman is the distance between your ears.
Mm.
The rest of it's icing on the cake.
Wow. So much to take in there, Jim. I mean, I appreciate you being so honest and open with your story. Obviously, you have incredible endurance to continue, right? Because I did my one race and I was like, I'm done. But on mile 21, I was like, you know what? I don't have to finish this race. What am I proving, right? But so I remember it was one of those things. If I hadn't been on the backside of the lake and knew that I would have to end up at the finish line anyway, I might have gave up because it is hard. It's not an easy race, and to know that you have the goal, you're like, hey, I'm gonna get 12. I'm gonna get to Kona. I'm gonna keep at it, and to have a couple of races in a row that didn't go your way. But to come back again and say, hey, I'm going to finish this. I'm going to see this thing through, I think is an incredible story.
You know, I am a 10-time Ironman finisher, and nobody can take that away from me. I'm also a 5-time Ironman DNFer. Nobody can take that away from me either.
Yeah, but I think that...
Now what did I figure? I've lived through three Ironman races that have been postponed or canceled because of COVID. And I still have Ironman Wisconsin, which was supposed to be my 12th. It'll now end up being my 11th here in September. I have signed up for Ironman Florida. So it looks like Florida could be my 12th. I have some unfinished business to do, again, at Florida. Florida, everybody says it's such an easy race. No easy races. There's things about every single race that make it difficult. That's why it's an Ironman. But I've also put myself on the wait list here for Chattanooga. I was on the wait list for Tulsa, and Ironman told me 7 days before Tulsa that I could go. And you get ready for an Ironman logistically, traveling and all that stuff in 7 days. But since I live in Chattanooga, I figured, you know, once I get done with Ironman Wisconsin, you know, if they call me up, they send me an email saying, hey, do you want to do Chattanooga? It's right down the road. So I can do that. Don't worry about hotels. So
yeah, that's right in your backyard.
This could be 11 and 12, and it could also be 13. And then I will be in Texas because I deferred to Texas next year for 2020. Mm-hmm. And I will be there. And Vicky's 12th will be actually Wisconsin. So I'm really more cheering her on. Even though it'll be my 11th, she'll get her legacy's invite to go to Hawaii. So, you know, if I can do three and catch back up to her, so we're at the same number, mm-hmm. you know, there's a good chance that this person that has become very close to me and I could probably do the same Kona race at the same time. So we'll see. It's all up to Ironman after that point.
So let me ask you this, because you're still working, right? So you still work mm-hmm. full-time. And obviously it sounds like you are racing at least once a year, if not multiple times a year. How do you schedule training? Are you just constantly training, or do you have do you know, okay, I need X number of weeks to get ready with it? How do you approach that?
How do I train? You know, I'm looking at my bike right now. My bike sits here in my office, and my bike and I travel everywhere. I am the king of trainer rides. I'm not gonna sit here and lie. 100% of my biking is done on the trainer. Thankfully, this year I discovered Zwift, you know, yep. the little video game that yep. you can ride with people all around the world. That's been a lifesaver, because up until this point, it's been YouTube videos, movies, TV. And it was, you know, no matter how painful trainer rides are to begin with, try doing it for multiple years. So at least on the biking side, Zwift has kind of put a new fresh look to my trainer ride. So, you know, if I could get sponsored by Hilton Properties, you know, I stay in a lot of Home 2 Suites at Hampton Inns. And every night, my bike gets set up in the trainer in that room, and I pedal to my heart's content. And then when I'm done with that, I go down to the Hampton Inn treadmill, and I do my whatever my runs are on there. If I'm home this morning, my subdivision has a 5.5 mile loop if you do all the road. Chattanooga is quite hilly, and I do on top of a pretty big hill. So my runs are challenging, but I get outside and I try to do my runs when I'm home. And I belong to the Y, and I use the Y a lot when I go to different towns to do my swims.
Okay.
You know, after a long day of work, it's, you know, it's hard to get back on that bike or go, oh my gosh, I gotta do a 7 mile treadmill run or something like that. So again, I mentioned the longest distance in this entire thing is actually the distance between your ears. And if you can conquer that, if you can control that, training becomes secondary in what you want.
Now, I completely agree. I've told a couple people that I do believe it's a mental exercise. Like, I mean, obviously you have to be in a certain physical shape, but there's all shapes and sizes on the course on race day, right? So you don't have to be that elite athlete with the 2% body fat or anything like that, but you have to be mentally strong.
The people that are missing limbs or their face with cancer, or you know, they were a caregiver from someone who one of their parents that was dying for a long time and they couldn't get out. You know, again, bless the people's hearts that are fast, and they have to go through their own trials to get where they are. But it's those everyday, I don't know, can I use the word normal? Everyday normal people that have to do their 9-to-5 jobs, help their families, everything that, you know, that life gets in front of them, and they still have to get on the bike, or they still have to get on the run, or they have to do some yoga, or they have to do some strength training or something. Anything that you can do, you know, these are the people that inspire me.
Yeah.
You know, the great thing about my speed on the run gives me a lot of time to talk to a lot of people. And we share stories, and you get to hear everybody's stories. I mean, my story is no different or no more spectacular than the person who's just did one. Everybody's story and how they get to that, just to toe the starting line, let alone to do the race, is it's mind-blowing. And to know that we are a small percentage of the planet that even wants to try to accomplish something like this, let alone finish it, is spectacular.
No, I totally agree. And talking to people on the race course is probably the greatest benefit of not being able to wear your earbuds, right? Because you don't, you know what I'm saying? Because you then you're forced to talk to people. Because I had the same strategy. I would run and catch up to somebody, and then I would walk and talk to them for a little while, and then I would run and catch up to the next person in front of me, and that's how I managed the run for sure.
I've made a lot of good friends. Friends that have seen me, that they probably roll their eyes every time the word Ironman comes out of my mouth. Oh, here's Jim's story again. And oh, what? But they all help. I think a lot about them, especially running through the tough times on the bike, or the tough times on the run. And I, you know, it sounds weird, but I ask them to help me. And you know, the biggest supporter I have in this is, and no offense to everybody else, I have the world's best Sherpa. Nobody what she's had to do for me and does for me to get me to that finish line. Yeah. I mean, thank God she's an excellent cook. She you know, I have a buffet practically in front of me all the time after I'm done with all these races. Every time I feel like I want to quit, she finds herself on that spot in the race where she talks me off the ledge. You know, it helps when you have support like that.
Oh, I don't think it's possible to do it without the support of your spouse or partner. I couldn't have done it at all. My wife was incredibly supportive through my journey. I was going to ask you if you could go back to the very beginning when you started, right? And knowing all the things that you know now, right? Would you do it again?
Oh man, maybe pause. I've been asked that question a little differently a lot lately, but I'll answer your question first. Your answer is yes, I would do it. There have been a lot of people that have doubted me, high school, grade school, former employers and so on, which grew into a person that doubted myself a lot. I'm my worst enemy in all of this. And, you know, it's nice when you cross the finish line and you can kind of give them the double bird. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But all those people are now in my past. The one that I still have to conquer. And I won't conquer that person until I finish running down Alihi Drive in Kona. Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of people ask me lately, you know, if you weren't at number 10, would you continue on this Kona journey? And truthfully, if I was at number 3 or number 4, it's a difficult question to answer. Would I stop? There's a part of me that says, yeah, go do something else in your life. There's so much more, many more things out there that you can enjoy. I mean, I'm 54 years old. I'm only 10 years, 15 years short of retirement. Start to travel, start to do other things. Maybe focus on this wife person that you have and do more things. But she probably wouldn't let me. She knows that there's a unfinished goal. And you know, this year, the word journey, my journey has changed over to a quest. I think that's the next level after a journey. You know, you start with
sounds right.
You know, I'm in my quest period now. I have to finish this, and I have to get to Kona at some point. Not so much to finish it, but to put a final nail in this coffin of this person who always doubts himself.
And I think you know, there's obviously a lot of motivation in that, right? I think to some degree, probably everybody who's being honest is motivated by somebody who has doubted them, whether it's themselves or somebody else. And there's that justification to prove somebody wrong, prove yourself wrong, or prove others wrong. And so I think that's completely reasonable. And I think I could definitely connect to that for sure. But let me ask you this: once you finish and you cross the finish line on a Leahy Drive, what happens next? Like, are you done? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, have you thought that far ahead?
I don't allow myself to think about that too much yet. Let me get to number 11. Let me get to number 12. Let me get all the paperwork into Ironman. Let me get my validation race done in Texas next year. Mm-hmm. Let me get my travel plans, how to get everything to Hawaii. Let me get finished with Hawaii. Then I could probably answer that better. I mean, truthfully, could I see myself going on? I mean, those women and those men were in their 60s and their 70s and into their 80s doing this. They sure get a little bit bigger cheers.
Yeah. Well, I was just.
And the rest of the crowd. And you know, there's people out there that have done over 100 of these things. I mean, what's next? I don't really let myself think about that too much yet.
Okay. And that's fair. I was just doing the math and I'm thinking you've been on this journey quest 13 years, right? You're 55. That's like 25% of your life, right? Total.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would think it would be a hard thing to just stop.
Well, again, I defer back to some of my friends. I have a good friend down in Houston. His name's Robert. No matter what he says, he's always been much more talented than I am. Boston finisher and all this stuff. He makes it look easy. And he originally, I was trying to stick with him so we could race Kona at the same time. Well, he finished Kona. I think he finished Kona in 2018. I was there for him, and it was a magical day. He hasn't thought about doing an Ironman since. He does marathons.
Yeah.
I have no desire to go past 26.2 miles. No desire whatsoever.
Yeah.
But you know, he's found something that interests him next. I don't know what that would be for me yet. If I allow myself to dream about what's after Hawaii, I'm missing the point. I'm not focusing
on.
I'm not, and you know, it's gonna after I get these two this year and do my validation race early next year. There's no guarantee I will be in Kona in October 2022. There is a waiting list.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to keep on doing them until Kona or Ironman people call you and say, hey, your turn.
You're up. Yep, you're up.
So that, I think I might be looking at 2024, 2025.
Okay. I think that's so healthy, though, the way you just frame that is I'm not looking past Kona. And I know I was curious if you had said, oh, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm done or whatever. But so many things, at least in my life, I'm not projecting, but so many things in my life, I haven't taken the time to enjoy the experience at the time. I was always looking to the next thing. And then in retrospect, I'd look back and say, oh, I wish I had enjoyed the process better. And as I have gotten older, I think I'm doing a better job of that now, but it's still something that I think I struggle with a little bit. So that's such, I think it's such a healthy way to be handling that. Well, so that's,
you know, as parents say and stuff like that, you get wiser as you get older. You know, you think they're wrong at that point. Well, they're 100% right.
Absolutely. That's absolutely. So I got one last question for you. What advice would you give to somebody who is struggling, right? So whether they're struggling to complete their first or whether they're struggling to compete their most current, right? I mean, obviously the last year has been crazy, but you know, you've now started 15 of these races based on my math, right? So you know what is involved in juggling life and family and travel. What advice would you give somebody that's just having a hard time that you feel like has helped you?
Wow. I can go so many different directions on this one. Well, if you're struggling, there's nothing wrong with taking some time off. When you start this, you know, whatever the word you want to use, I you know, everybody kind of says, what's your why? Why do you want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do you want to get up at 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning to go outside when it's dark and it's cold and it's rainy to go run in your neighborhood and your neighbors are sipping coffee going, what is this?
What's wrong with that guy? Yeah.
or you have a 6+ hour trainer ride on your bike. If your desire has left, take a break. The break could be a week. It could be a month. It could be a year. But you have to be okay with that decision that you make. Again, how many times have we said it? Ironman's supposed to be hard. The race itself is such a small part of this entire lifestyle. It's the 5 o'clock in the morning wake ups. It's the, oh my gosh, I just pulled my butt into a hotel and I still got 2 hours, 3 hours of working out. You know, if you can conquer those things, those are the things that'll get you to the starting line of that race, toe the beach. The rest of that day, even though I haven't finished five of them, I get it. The rest of that day is icing on the cake. Enjoy it. There are a few of us that can win a Kona slot. You have 17 hours. You paid for 17 hours. They don't give you any refunds on time not used.
Yeah.
The buffet gets better at night. I mean, that's when the soup comes out and more pretzels, even though they've been touched by hundreds of people. But enjoy the moment, especially if it's your first. Like I mentioned earlier, if you had 7 hours, I could tell you every aspect of that first race I did, you know, like how the wind felt and where the sun was and how I felt at this mile and, you know, and all this type of stuff. You'll never have another first Ironman. Remember it. Slow everything down. Stay in the moment. Focus on the things that you can control. And you'll get to that finish line and you'll get to hear those glorious words from Mike Riley or David Downey or any of these other people that call your name over across the line. For those who've done it more, truthfully, I don't know how the people have done it that they've done 100 of them, 200 of them. I mean, there's those freaks that are out there. And I mean freaks in a good way. How they financially, logistically, emotionally can do that. I mean, that's just their life. For those who don't finish, 2.4 mile swim, 112 mile bike, 26.2 mile race, brag for the rest of your life, right?
Yep.
If you don't finish, nobody cares, but you will care.
Yeah, that's very well said. You know, you're only competing against yourself, right? Obviously, like you said, there's a few select elite age group athletes that are fast enough to compete. And probably a lot of those men and women could qualify to be a pro if they wanted to be, right? There's a lot of really, really fast, quote unquote, amateur athletes out there, right? So just go out there and live your best life.
People are finishing. They're finishing this thing under 10 hours.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
7 more hours to go.
Crazy. Well, Jim, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and joining me today. Talk about your journey, being so open and honest, sharing both the highs and the lows. Right. We definitely will be cheering for you. In Wisconsin, right? I'm hoping to be able to track you on the Ironman tracker. I think my buddy John is going to be in Wisconsin as well, awesome. So that'll be fun. But we just wish you all the luck and success in the future. I know you will get to cross the line in Hawaii. I can feel it. I can feel it. I'm pushing all the positivity your way, buddy. It's all coming your way. Not that you need it.
I'm so close. And Kona brings its own challenges. You know, my history of doing really hot races. That's why when you said you've done Lubbock in those races, it's like, yikes, I'd melt like an ice cream cone. I have to get over those type of things. But those challenges will come after I get number 11 and number 12 done.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely you need to find some cooler venues. Lubbock was hot.
I got to find some hotter venues to get used to it.
My back tire, because of the heat in transition, exploded. And you come out, I don't know if you're super familiar with the course, but it's hilly out there too. And you come out of T1 and you go straight up about a 7% grade. And it was like I was pedaling in quicksand. I was like, what is going on? I look back, I'm halfway up the hill and my tire's flat. My back tire's flat. So I get off of the road and I told this story before. I practiced changing the tube in my tire a handful of times. I never practiced using the CO2 cartridge. I couldn't figure out how to use the CO2 cartridge. It took me 15 minutes to figure out. Literally, another athlete, he had the similar deal. His tire popped, pulled over. He looked around. He says, I'm going to go get my other tire out of my car. He ran to his car, brought his other tire back, his spare rim or whatever, and had his, he was back on the course before I'd figured out how to use the CO2. It was crazy.
Worry about the things you can control.
Right? Yeah. So definitely practice the CO2 cartridge.
Yeah. I'm not very good at that either.
Oh my gosh. Right. I don't know what you got planned for the rest of the day, but I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
I really enjoyed talking to you. Tomorrow morning, I got my long bike ride. It's repeat and do over again. So that's all I do.
There you go. Well, I really appreciate it. It was good talking to you and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thank you for thinking I was entertaining.
Oh, for sure. And I learned a lot about you today. I learned you were on the thumbnail of Ironman Texas. I'm going to have to look that up for sure. And then if I can go back and find the archive for Maryland and see your story after your surgery, I think that'd be super interesting.
Yeah. Well, we'll just keep on moving forward. That's all I can do.
That's sound advice. Keep moving forward.
Yep.
Cool. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you have any questions, advice that you would like to share, or would like to be a guest on the show and share your story, you can email everydayironmanpodcast@gmail.com. Also, don't forget to follow on Instagram @everydayironmanpodcast. Until next time, keep moving forward.